This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is one of those days, Brent, where I actually say, woohoo, it's Monday.
Yeah, you excited about it? Welcome everybody to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're excited to be with you this first Monday after the holiday.
Yes.
And first Monday into the Christmas season. And I hope you're all being safe out there in these icy conditions.
It was dicey this morning for me.
A little frosty out there. Especially if those of you like Dave Bourne with a front-wheel drive car, right? No, rear-wheel drive car.
Rear-wheel, anyway. And lots of horsepower.
Newsmakers, thanks for joining us. This is the place you want to be for Mid-Valley Talk. For Salem and Kaiser, Marion and Polk counties, this is where we cover local issues and ideas and institutions and individuals and things that are going to affect our quality of life, things that affect our politics, things that affect our pocketbooks. We're going to get to some of the stories about the Thanksgiving holiday in just a little bit. But first, I want to go right to a guest we have on the phone. I've invited him on to talk about a subject that we've talked about here on Newsmakers in the previously. And that has to do with how we're going to redistrict, how we're going to redraw political lines coming up after the census. So we've invited Norman Turrell. He's with the League of Women Voters in Portland. Norman, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you, Dave?
Wow, we're great. This is Brent. And
Brent, sorry. Yep.
Nope, that's fine. We're not in the same place, so we can't expect you to memorize our voices just yet.
Right.
Norman, welcome. Let's first start off by saying, what is your role with the League of Women Voters?
I am the governance coordinator and the immediate past president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I live in Portland, but it's the Oregon League that we're talking about here.
Okay, so there is a Oregon organization. In addition to having specific county chapters,
yes, there's about 16 local chapters of the Oregon League in lots of communities around the state.
Oh wow!
But the initiative that we're going to be talking about is proposed by the Oregon League of Women Voters.
Okay. So if you don't mind me asking the obvious on behalf of our listener, you don't sound like maybe you're a woman voter.
You got that right. Okay. It's a misconception that the League of Women Voters is all women. We're actually 10 or 20% of men in the organization. Even though we're 100 years old next year, we've been men for about 50 years almost.
Wow. 10 to 20%. Well, I can look into my local county chapter then.
Yes, you may.
That is great.
Please do.
So what is it that, how long have you been involved with the League?
Actually, quite a long time. I joined the League originally back in the 1970s when men were first invited to join the League. And I've been active off and on ever since.
Nice. Obviously, you've put in your volunteer time if you're past president, and you're also help coordinate and send the messages and communications for the legislative agenda?
Yes.
Awesome.
So my expertise is in the governance issues like campaign finance reform or districting and ethics and so on.
And so let's, if you would, since you have such a long history and leadership role, explain to the listener what's the purpose of existence for the League of Women Voters?
Well, originally, we grew out of the women's suffrage movement of the 19th century, and when women finally got the vote with the passage of the 19th Amendment in 1920, they sort of looked around and tried to decide what they should do next, and they settled on first educating the newly enfranchised women, and that generalized to educating all voters and eventually working on any issue that the membership wanted to work on. And so we actually have maybe 70 or 90 different kinds of issues in what we call positions, or more like a platform plank, that we work on and advocate on behalf of our members and the general population.
Would you?
The general function of the league.
We're talking to Norman Turrell of the League of Women Voters in Portland, the Oregon League of Women Voters. And the topic today is going to be about redistricting and something we're going to have an opportunity to vote on coming up. Just trying to get a little bit of knowledge having to do with the league. Would you describe it as a partisan organization or an educational organization?
We are strictly nonpartisan. Our policy is to not support or oppose any candidate or political party.
But causes and initiatives.
Yeah. Nonpartisan doesn't mean a political, though.
Right.
We're certainly a political organization.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the redistricting. And is the league going this alone, or do you have other parties as well who are interested in the same movement?
We have formed a coalition of organizations that we're calling Politicians, Not People, Not Politicians. Sorry. And in that coalition is quite a variety of organizations that covers the whole spectrum of Oregon politics. On the more liberal end is the League and Common Cause and AAUW and NAACP and Eugene. And more on the left are the Taxpayers Association of Oregon and the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Those would be on the right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you have people from the left and right and interested in this. So in a nutshell, basically, we're going to have a census next year. After the census, each state is tasked with redistricting both for the state house, state senate, and they do it on the federal level as well. But here in Oregon, we're going to draw new lines for the districts we're going to elect our politicians in.
That's right. So it's especially important next year because Oregon is likely to get a sixth congressional district, in which case we're going to have to draw all the congressional boundaries again. They'll all change. And it's always important for the legislature, because the legislature is tasked with the job now to redistrict the state every 10 years, and they've usually screwed it up. In the last 100 years, they've managed to pass a redistricting bill twice. Once was in 1981 when they passed a bill and was signed by the governor, but the courts had to intervene and required the Secretary of State to actually adjust the boundaries. And the last time was in 2011 when we had a special case. The legislature was evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats, and the Republicans didn't want the Secretary of State to handle the job because it was at that time a Democrat.
Oh, we're losing you a little bit.
Kate Brown was the Secretary of State at that time, and the Republicans did not want her to have the job. So they were willing to compromise, and what we think came out of that is what we would call a bipartisan gerrymander, at least in part.
Bipartisan gerrymandering. Let's everybody do then a finagling and benefit here, us over here and you over there. But
that's right. The sort of trading safe districts is what it amounted to.
Just what we want our statesmen to do. So you're saying that the federal districts will be drawn here locally in Oregon. It won't have anything to do with the federal. We're going to be doing that in addition to the state House of Representatives and the state Senate.
Right.
Wow. Wow. That's going to be a monumental task, and it's going to be quite a political football unless we pass this measure, right?
Yes. And so the proposal is in general that we want the people to be doing the redistricting or choosing their politicians instead of the politicians choosing their voters.
I love it when you say it just like that. It really just nails it on the head. We're gonna take a quick break, just a couple of minutes, and we're going to come back and continue talking to Norman Turrell of League of Women Voters of Oregon, coming out of Portland. He's on the phone with us here on Newsmakers. Stick with us, because we're going to tell you what you're voting on and how it's going to work right after this. This is Brent with Dave on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. And on the phone with us, our invited guest, Norman Turrell. He's involved in the Oregon League of Women Voters. Got to get that in the right order. And the initiative having to do with redistricting rules. And let's talk a little bit about that, Norman. One, we get to vote on it, right?
Yes, the process is currently embedded in the state constitution, so it has to be a constitutional amendment that is voted on by the voters in the general election next year if we get it on the ballot.
Okay, what do you have to do to get it on the ballot?
We have to collect signatures of something like 150,000 registered voters, and actually it's more than that because of some of them become invalid for various reasons. So a couple hundred thousand signatures have to be collected on the initiative petition for a constitutional amendment.
I really like this idea, folks. So if people and the listener wants to help, would they go to the website?
Yes, there's a website, peoplenotpoliticiansoregon.com, or just Google that phrase, people not politicians, and you'll get right to it.
So the proposal, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to mention that the actual petitioning has to come after the ballot title is written and agreed to in a long process we have here in Oregon. So it may be actually March or April before we begin petitioning, unfortunately.
Is the goal then to have it on the November ballot?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have to collect those signatures by early July next year.
Okay, let's talk a bit about the proposal and how it would work. We're going to pluck the power out of the partisan elected representatives and senators and put it in a multi-partisan, is what you say on the website, multi-partisan panel.
That's right. And that there's two main features to the process. One would be the method by which the commission would be appointed, then the process by which the commission would actually operate. So the process for appointing the commission, first it's a 12-member commission, and the first thing that happens is that people would apply for the commission and they would then be screened for conflicts of interest. Conflicts of interest are anything to do with current politics, like if you're an incumbent office holder or candidate or a political party official or a member of the family of any of those kind of people. That's the kind of people we don't want to represent the voters. We want normal kinds of voters involved in the commission.
Norman, that would include precinct committee people, PCPs in each party?
Yes.
Okay, they're out. So you can't have somebody who's really involved in the county organization.
That's right.
Okay. But, all right, so four Republicans, four Democrats, and then four people who are neither of the above.
That's right.
Hmm.
Interesting. And who's going to pick the 12?
The first round is to kind of select people who know something about the process of government. And so there would be a panel of three administrative law judges who would sort through the applicants and form them into a pool of 150 candidates, and out of that 150, they would pick the first six randomly in two Democrats, two Republicans, and two other. This is actually an important feature, is the other registered voters, because currently in the legislature, there's no representatives of non-affiliated or other parties in the legislature. Hmm. So we think they should have an equal say in the process as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Sounds like jury duty picking, though.
Yeah. So they have to be registered voters.
A bit, but it has to be from people who actually applied for doing this job, not just randomly choosing voters.
Yeah.
So I'm going to submit my application, and, you know, you can be any of these other parties. You could be Constitution, you could be Green, you could be Socialist, you could be the Independent Party, any or non-affiliated, and they're going to get a third of the slots.
Yes. So non-affiliated voters are actually almost a third of the electorate now.
Yes, indeed. You can see people tend to get fed up a little bit with the two-party system and how polarizing it can be. So you sound like you're favorable about the petition. What is it that you see wrong in the system that you're willing to really kind of set it on its head?
Well, when the legislature does the process, they tend to bias the process in favor of their own political party or their incumbents or candidates. In other words, trying to predetermine the outcome of the election by placing voters in districts that will then be favorable to them. And there's various ways that they can do this, but the effect is the same in that the voters lose in the process, and it's less likely that the voters can actually change their representatives because they are put into what we would call safe districts where there's mostly one party or another.
Yeah, we'd really like to get away from the gamesmanship where people like get redistricted out of their own district that they represent.
Right.
Or
yeah, there's lots of games that the legislature can play. They often punish people that don't toe the party line or reward others who are instrumental in carrying out their policies. And so it gets involved in various legislative games and log rolling that really has nothing to do with redistricting.
We're talking to Norman Turrell, and he's with the League of Women Voters of the State of Oregon, about a petition that we hopefully will get on the ballot for next fall, having to do with taking the power of redistricting our lines after the 2020 census into the hands of a commission and out of the hands of the state legislature. Norman, so if I'm a Democrat, say I'm a Democrat, would I want to vote no on this because my party controls the legislature? Is that an uphill battle for kind of what is a nonpartisan or multipartisan initiative?
Actually, there's many Democrats that support our initiative. The state Democratic Party last year passed a platform plank that said that they want an independent entity to do the redistricting. And in the proposed Multnomah County Party platform that they're still working on, there's also a plank that says that they're in favor of a commission doing the redistricting. So you wouldn't think that at least some Democrats would be opposed, but that's not the case. This is a process issue, and as such, it's like a two-edged sword that can cut both ways. And often it does, because the legislature can change hands and the shoe can be on the other foot. And so in the long run, we think that everybody wins by a fair, unbiased, and transparent process to do the redistricting.
Well, I am with you. I tell you that. I appreciate you coming on and telling us about it. What about the caucus? What about the elected leaders? They're taking power out of their hands. And you said it very well. This is going to be a two-edged sword, because when you try to play politics, sometimes you don't look so good.
Mm-hmm.
So when the public, we can see it on the national stage now where there's so much going on, where they're fighting about things and they're not doing the people's work. And I could visualize this future in 2021 where the legislature just goes to work instead of fighting the redistricting, having it challenged in the courts, going to the Secretary of State in this long, prolonged battle, and then nobody really wins, right?
Yeah. So we'd like to avoid all that falderal and get it done in a way that voters are in charge and benefit from the process rather than the politicians.
So let's go back a little bit just in some of the nuts and bolts, because we do have some time to look at this, and that we'll be signing petitions presumably next spring and on the ballot a year from now. But you said that three administrative law judges select the initial 12. How does it perpetuate itself? And is the role a volunteer position?
Yes. It's unpaid as such, Commissioners would be paid their expenses and for their time, but when they're not working, they wouldn't be paid. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, we only need them once every 10 years, right?
Yeah. So they would be appointed every 10 years in the same process. They would actually hold office for the whole 10 years, but only be doing something and paid when they're actually on the job.
And so in the People Not Politicians initiative, how do they go about doing their job? So they're selected, there's 12 people, four R's, four D's, four others, and they're given all this information. It's going to be a bit of a task, hobby for some people with paperwork and advocates and people trying to petition for, they think this is logical, they think this is beneficial. How do they go about their process to redraw the lines? Because I imagine this is 12 people that don't have a lot of expertise in it.
Well, we think there will at least be intelligent people to do this process because they were selected for their abilities as well as the political party. But the first thing is they would have a set of criteria by which they would have to draw the lines. And these are largely criteria that is currently in use, but there's a couple of additional ones that we think would favor the voters. First would be communities of interest would have to be considered, and then competitiveness of the districts themselves, the past voting history of the districts, and registered voters that are registered in those districts. It depends on the commissioners themselves exactly how they would go about that business, though, and the voting process that we have specified would be that they'd have to have a majority of the commission voting for any set of maps, but the voting would have to be at least one commissioner from each of the three groups. So whether they would get seven votes, but they would have to have at least one Democrat, one Republican, or one other in the process, and that way it would be forced to compromise and benefit the voters instead of the politicians.
Okay, so you couldn't have maybe three people who are, I don't know, let's on the left side, there'd be Green Party, Socialist Party, whatever, and ganging up with four Democrats to outvote, because you have to pull along a Republican along with you.
That's right.
So you mentioned, one last question, some of the considerations and communities of interest and how competitive the district is to begin with. But what's a community of interest?
That's a very good question, and that's lightly defined in the proposal, but it's also up to the commissioners to decide exactly what that means as well. And that's actually one of the current criteria that the legislature has to use, but they often ignore it. The process in the legislature is often more consideration about the politics than the voters. And so the voters, even though they want to be represented in communities, they often are ignored. And the same thing is true of ethnic groups or religious groups or any other kind of group of people that you can think of that they really aren't considered in the legislative process hardly at all.
Okay. Norman, any final words you want to leave with the audience before you go? Something, do you need help or people to go for more information? I know PeopleNotPoliticiansOregon.com would be the website to go to for information.
So you can volunteer there. You can endorse our initiative there, and you can make contributions to the effort there. And we'd be very pleased to have that. Just understand that we're not starting petitioning until the springtime.
Okay. And is the League of Women Voters taking the lead? I mean, you know, you have this big coalition of groups.
Yes.
Will they be taking the lead in coordinating? Like, if we're contributing to the effort, are we contributing to the League?
You're not contributing to the League, but you'd be contributing to the coalition.
I see. Interesting.
Okay.
Great. Well, no final words. We're going to let you go, but I have a feeling we're going to be talking to you again as the initiative gets underway next spring. We're going to want to hear about it. I think it's a great idea.
It is.
I think it is a great idea to take it out, and that way nobody embarrasses themselves playing too much partisan politics, right? And they can go to work doing things that are productive and instead of battling the political footballer.
Okay. I applaud that a lot.
Norman Turrell.
Well, Dave, I really enjoyed talking with you and hope to see you or talk with you again when we're underway next spring.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for taking your time. Stick with us, folks. We're going to come back and finish up the conversation about the redistricting with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Thank you, Rich.
It's still a woo-woo Monday.
I wonder how many Christmas trees Green Acres sold over the weekend.
Right?
They do flocked things and unflocked
things. They'll even put
the
lights on for you, too.
Oh, yeah. They'll do it all. I'm going to get to the one of these days where I'm just going to like write a check and say, would you please put up all my Christmas lights and take them down? And while you're there, clean out my gutter. And also, please set up my Christmas tree and flock it on the way. Ho, ho, ho.
Wow.
It'd be nice.
Flock it on the way.
There we go. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, and we're talking about an initiative to get on the ballot for 2020 to change the way in which our state draws our political boundaries, which will come in 2021 after the census is completed, the national census is completed next year. I like it. I like it. I applaud the League of Women Voters. That's the Oregon organization, and I'm gonna draw a little bit of a distinction because there are chapters in each county.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you have a regional area, then you have different individuals involved, right?
Sure.
And plus maybe a different perspective. Personally, I found both in Marion and Polk counties that the League tended heavily to the left and heavily towards tax measures and the Democratic agenda, which, of course, as we all know, is identical to the public employee union's agenda.
Right.
So that's the problem I've had with the local jurisdictions or the local clubs. It's nice to know from Mr. Turrell that I can join the League of Women Voters.
And
they're not
going
to discriminate against me on the basis of my sexual identity.
Sure.
Or gender identity. I gotta get that right. My gender identity. My name is Brent, and I do identify male. As does Norman. So
right.
He's been involved since the 70s.
That's amazing. That's
really interesting.
Yeah.
All right, folks. This is, we said it before the break. We're going to be talking about this a lot next year. And I favor it. Sounds like Dave does too.
It's just. Because we were talking about it, 6 months ago?
Yeah, with Kevin Mannix. And
yeah.
Kevin Mannix had an initiative as well, and they were parallel. And I talked to Norman Turrell. Before the show, a week or so ago, and he said that Kevin has since dropped his initiative.
Oh.
So this one's going to take the lead and move forward with its coalition.
Well, that's good news, too, because what Kevin was telling us was that sometimes the legislature would redraw the lines, and sometimes, like you pointed out, the representative didn't represent the district he was living in anymore, which totally did not make sense. But then now that you explain that the legislature controlled that and they tend to lean one way or the other in their own political party, that's how that happened. Have you ever been living somewhere and got a notice that you are no longer represented by so-and-so?
I don't think I have.
I have. It was weird. I lived in a place for 5 years and I knew that my representative was this person. And I was supporting them in my elections, right? And then I got a notice before the next election that the redistricting had happened. And I no longer could vote for that person. I was like, what? The line got moved because of the census. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense, but okay.
That did happen to us. I don't remember getting the letter, but I remember living in a district that actually Kevin Cameron, now Marion County Commissioner, he was the state representative at the time, and the line did move.
Oh,
and then we ended up in a different district. So it happens, folks. And let's just draw you a mental picture of this. Let's say it's a fairly even split, Republicans and Democrats in this district, and the Democrats really want to either take it from the Republicans or, you know, fend off a challenge from Republicans. They can change the line, and they know where their registered voters are. So they can say, hey, look at this neighborhood up on the hill. Wow, we've got, you know, 70% of the registered voters up here on this hill are Democrats. So let's make a little squiggle. We'll blow this out like a faulty balloon, and we'll just take this little finger of voters, because that's going to give us a voter registration advantage. And those people up here on the hill that are Democrats, they're currently in a district that favors Republicans 52-48. So we're going to not win this one. We're going to not win that one anyway, so we're going to make sure we win this one. So they're just drawing squiggly lines for the benefit of, that's when they're saying, and Norman was talking about it in the previous segment, politicians are choosing who their voters are.
They get
to choose who their voters are. They get to look at who's registered to vote for what in what neighborhoods, and then draw circles around them or squares around them in that.
So do they have like a zipper line that they could do on one street? You know, like, take this house and then not the next three houses, but then two houses after that. And then
that's very funny. Legally, they're allowed to do that. I mean,
see, because that's how they do it, with to get that representative that represents that area out of it.
Yeah, we've certainly seen it done where they have long, long fingers where, you know, the district is, say it's a relative square or rectangle, but then they just, this looks like Oklahoma with this big long panhandle or something, because they want to grab a specific demographic.
Let's take it out of their hands.
So let's think about how important this is. As he was saying, we might get a sixth congressional district in Oregon. So we have five right now, of which four are Democrats. And the fifth is Greg Walden, who has announced he's not going to run again.
Yeah.
So you have no incumbent running in the one district that leans to the right, leans towards Republicans. Mm-hmm. Where's that sixth one going to go?
Right.
Is that sixth one going to be entirely in the metro area?
Probably.
Right? Are we going to carve up part of Greg Walden's and dilute the impact of Republican voters in the, you know, the majority of land space, at least in the state, that is that tends to the right?
So most of his area is out in the farming area, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of eastern Oregon, some of southern Oregon as well.
Yeah,
all the way into Idaho. So it's a it's a very large district, because obviously the population is more sparse. That's going to be really interesting and really, really important. Are we going to end up with five Democrats and one Republican? Are we going to end up with six Democrats and no Republicans? Because they could draw a line and then dilute all the Republican votes if they draw the line so it encompasses a heavily Democratic area, say like Eugene, and then it stretches out to Lake County.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine? So then Eugene voters get to pick the Lake County, you know, that kind of thing. And,
wow.
You know, maybe we'll go Gresham, and we'll stretch it out to Pendleton. You know, if you divide the state like that, where you have the major metropolitan, the urban areas stretching in far into the, I mean, it can happen, into the rural areas, you're just diluting any representation from people who are registered to vote Republican.
So this initiative better pass.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I think it's in the best interest of the politicians as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they do. I mean, these things get so out of hand, and they argue about them. And while they're not doing anything to help us.
You mean like the impeachment inquiry?
I wasn't going to go there, but funny you should draw a straight line for that.
Pretty much what's going on out there. I'm just speaking the truth.
And then it ends up getting sued into the court.
Because I can't name one thing that they've done in the last 4 years that Trump's been president. I can't name one thing they've passed that's in the public's interest.
Last thing on this before we take a break, we have to look at our own representative in the District 5. And so you have Representative Schrader, mm-hmm. who has a challenger to his seat that he's being primaried, which is a verb now, being primaried because he didn't vote for Nancy Pelosi to be chair. and he's a moderate Democrat and a blue dog Democrat. And so he's not wide-eyed leftist enough. So they're going to not give him any money, and they're going to send a challenger up against him for the primary.
Dang.
So this is another example where people can go eat their own, even, right? If they want to, if they really want to play politics, they could just gerrymander, which means manipulate the borders, gerrymander even a U.S. representative out of his own district.
Dang.
So
that's cold.
Important stuff, folks, on this beautiful Monday to live in mid-Willamette Valley. Stay with us. We're going to take one more break. This is Brent and Dave. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back, folks. Appreciate you spending your lunch hour with us here on KYKN, listening to Newsmakers, the local talk for the Mid-Willamette Valley. And if you want to know what's going on in Salem and Kaiser and surrounds, you're listening to Brent and Dave. Just wanted to wrap up the People Not Politicians. If you missed it in the previous segments, peoplenotpoliticiansoregon.com. And the redistricting and some of the things that they're going to allow and not allow.
Okay.
So if you're going to redistrict, you need to take in our guest at the beginning of the hour, Norman Turrell from the League of Women Voters for the state of Oregon, was saying you have to take into having approximately the same amount of population.
Right.
That should be a no-brainer. Okay. The U.S. Constitution and the Voting Rights Act, that's going to be a no-brainer. Contiguity, basically that it should be relatively clustered together, right? Contiguousness. How about that? We make up a word?
Not like a hand with, you know, five little districts sticking out.
Yes. And it would be nice for us voters to have continuity as well. So that if we're in a district, tend to stay in a district.
And not get that letter.
City, county, neighborhood, communities of interest. I would think zip codes would be, if I were going to start, I'd start with zip codes. I mean, they're already predefined.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to cluster inside a community. We know that 97301 and 2 and 3 and 4 all, you know, primarily all in the city limits. Anyway, and at least they're defined borders, and then just adjust as you need to grab some population to do some of these other factors. But what's prohibited is what's interesting.
Hmm.
Well, is even more interesting. You can't consider the address of the office holder or anybody currently running for office.
That's a good one.
You should just take that off, and that might be an inadvertent redistricting of somebody who gets redistricted out of the area that they represent. You can't consider, under this proposal, it's not law yet, folks. We would have to make it law by changing the Constitution and voting, first getting it on the ballot for next year, and then voting for it in November of 2020. Which is going to be a presidential election, and there'll be probably huge voter turnout.
Sure.
Pro-Trump, anti-Trump,
yeah,
right?
It's good that they're having it on there.
Favoring or discriminating against an office holder, candidate, or political party, which is great, which is why we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to like be punitive to somebody who didn't vote the way you wanted them to.
Right? Wow.
Or we're going to make those constitutionalists pay. Or creating a district for the purpose of, with the effect of diluting the voter strength of any language or ethnic identity group. Interesting.
Huh.
So let's take Woodburn as an example. Maybe someone who would want to cut up the Spanish-speaking or the Russian-speaking population for God knows what reason, right?
Right.
And those kinds of things would be prohibited under the rulemaking. Interesting stuff. How was your Thanksgiving? Did you have any political arguments at your Thanksgiving table?
No, actually not.
That's pretty good. You didn't invite any relatives over?
No, there was just the three of us.
So
it was good.
In America.
Yours?
Yeah, we did pretty well considering I had a sibling over, and the sibling and I were not opposites, but he is one of those five percenters. Right.
Five percenter.
Yeah. One of the people on the five percent, and I'm generous there, fringe of, he's on the left.
Okay.
So we had one discussion that was a little bit of a debate, and it had to do with what we were talking about at Newsmakers last week, is Kevin Kaepernick. I'm Kevin. Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
And
who's still not hired or playing yet.
No, and he's not going to be. He went to un-Thanksgiving dinner, and he was at Alcatraz and talked about how the Native Americans' land had been stolen and blah, blah, blah. Now, even my son, who is 24 years old, he said it wasn't stolen, it was conquered.
Right.
And that sounds harsh, but there's not a square foot of land anywhere in the earth that was not conquered by somebody else at some point in time. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, we think about England, and I really wonder if the English have this hand-wringing that some of them have their roots in Scandinavia, and some of them have their roots in Germanic tribes, and some of them have their roots in the Roman Empire, and some of them have their roots in, you know, what is now France. And the Franks, by the way, they were German tribes that conquered. It's like every square foot of land in the world was conquered by somebody else at some point. But in America, we have a little bit of self-loathing about it. I don't know. Anyway, so that was the discussion. And I just brought it up because it plays into the fallacy of discourse in America that if you disagree with somebody, you must be a hateful person, a bigoted person, or an idiot.
Right.
Right? And so, unfortunately, my brother did paint everybody with, well, if they don't like what Kaepernick did and says, they don't care about black people.
Wow.
It sounded a little bit like Kanye West.
Wow.
Right? And George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Jeez.
You remember that?
Yes.
George Bush hates black people, whatever
it
was.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, that's a pretty broad brush to paint. And so I won't talk about family too much, but that was a discussion back and forth where I said, no, there's a number of examples of why they don't like what he did. In the manner in which he did, even people who agree with his social warrior cause and want him to speak out in his social justice, even those people may not have agreed that this is the best way to communicate the message. And I pointed out, because we are now a service member family, that service member families who have lost somebody dear to them in protection of our great nation, it might be hurtful for them to somebody who feels as though they're disrespecting, you know, it's a disrespectful time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they're wrong. They're wrong. Their feelings are wrong. I don't know. You know, that's the problem. So anyway, other than that, it went great. We get along great. And as an example of family members, cannot vote the same, cannot view the earth the same. And
did you shake hands and say, you know, agree to disagree?
Pretty much. We just dropped it.
Oh,
you know, and
wow.
I teased him about it the next day. I said,
oh, that's good.
Because we're talking about traveling together. And I said, no, we're going to do that. We're not going to argue about this anymore. Hey, folks, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you learning a little bit about the Mid-Valley and the initiatives in front of us. This is Brent with Dave on 1430 KYKN.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.